Welcome back, everyone, to Fans and the Pro. For the next hour, we'll be talking, of course, Saints in Dallas, as we have been. We'll also talk LSU football as they take on South Carolina to begin SEC play. And Tulane will be at Oklahoma tomorrow at 2:30 to take on the Sooners. So we'll talk a little Tulane football and LSU as well. And we always, this is just the way it is when we get into these shows. Sometimes on Friday, it becomes a little heavy opponent, right? And so we don't spend as much time talking about the Saints. And I was just curious, one of the things Coach Allen talked about post-game in the press conference was that he brought up the stat that the Saints had run the ball. They were averaging, but he said it was best in the NFL, 2.9 yards prior to contact. And that's, I've heard this stat before, but you don't hear it a great deal. And I would imagine from your aspect and from a running game, I guess put that into perspective for me.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, but it tells you that they are blocking up the line of scrimmage, and normally the backs are getting to the second and third level is basically what that means. And right. So the D-line, they're out of the equation. So you're getting a hat on a hat. Even from an offensive lineman's perspective that is pushing up to the linebackers, which is considered the second level, you're getting a hat on him. And if you aren't getting a hat on him, he isn't getting a hand on you until you're right at 3 yards down the field or, you know, from where the ball is snapped. Normally a running back, you want to average 4.5 yards per carry. If I am at 3 yards before I get touched, I can fall forward for, you know, one yard just in itself. So at some point, you're going to make a man miss, and that's the third-level guy, and that's where the big runs come out. So you talk about having plus 10, plus 20, plus 30-yard runs. That's what they're able to do. But from an assignment standpoint, they know what they're supposed to do because they're getting a hat on a hat. Now it's can you break a big one, or if you aren't breaking a big one, you're getting plus 7, plus 8 type runs.
Well, last year, Alvin's longest run from scrimmage was 17. He had 17,
yeah, 17
on Sunday,
yards
on Sunday,
yeah.
Right? And Jamal had a 14-yarder. Taysom had a 12-yarder. I mean, it's, you know, it's not 20-plus, but let me tell you, man, those runs were huge.
Here's the other thing. If you go back and you look at it, there were a couple runs, and this is no knock on a receiver because, I mean, it is what it is. There's a couple runs that if a receiver and or a tight end finish, I won't even say just receiver. If the Saints finish some blocks, just finish, you will have some plus 30-yard runs, even maybe even longer, but at least plus 30. I mean, because as a back, particularly as a running back, even Taysom, and I'm going to throw you in there, if you get up on the safety more than once in a game and you can't make him miss, shame on you. Shame on you. You can't let a safety tackle you 100% of the time. You can't let a corner tackle you 100% of the time. So those got to be 50-50. I've got to win my 50-50 runs where I'm matched up on a safety or a corner, and I've got to be able to make him miss, and I got to house call something. I just can't allow that guy to tackle me, and he be the last line of defense every time, and he makes that tackle. At some point, I have to make him miss and be able to make a house call.
I think that's what you talked about with Alvin's long run, is that he had that one safety to beat.
That's
and
it.
If he, when he sees that film, he's going to go, man, I should have beat
close.
That dude.
Right. I'm close.
Yeah.
I'm close to breaking it. And so that's the next level as a player that you have to take it to. And so I was originally fussing about the receivers not finishing blocks, but then it popped up in my head. No, there was one inside run, and I think it kind of surprised Fuaga, you know, because he's already 8 yards down the field. You're normally thinking, the play is over. But Alvin ended up right on his hip. And not to say that it was his guy that fell off, because I don't think it was. I think it was a safety. But it was his guy that Alvin kind of saw as a runner. You see the flash of another color. And now you say, oh, I can't go there. I have to take this angle and maybe approach this guy by taking half a man. But if I finish that run, now I have a three-way go at that defender where I can set him up, where I can hit him inside, I can hit him right, I can go right at him. And it's just playing games. I mean, it's playing the game, but it doesn't happen if the guys up front, if they don't get a hat on hat. And now every run, I'm having to make a guy miss at the line of scrimmage or in the backfield. Man, that's tough sled.
2.9 yards before contact. We'll talk a little LSU at South Carolina when we come back from the break. This is Fans of the Pro, Mike Hostus McAllister, here on WWLAMFM.com, always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back to Fans of the Pro, Mike Hostus McAllister, until 6 o'clock tonight. Joining us now, Wilson Alexander, covers LSU for the Advocate and the Times-Picayune. The Tigers, 16th ranked, 1-1, take on South Carolina, 2-0, and as they begin SEC play on the road, 11 o'clock in the morning Central Time, but a noon kickoff in South Carolina. Wilson, how are you this afternoon?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We are well. You're on with Deuce McAllister and myself. Just kind of break it down for us. It feels like the LSU season the last couple of years has kind of gone on that opening game. Then you come home and you kind of get your feet under you. Then you begin the SEC. So it just kind of break this down for us as they begin SEC play against South Carolina.
Yeah, you know, I came across a stat today how there are two coaches in LSU history who have lost a season opener and then gone on to win 10 games. Brian Kelly and Paul Dietzel. Dietzel did it in 1961. Kelly is now trying to do it for the third straight year. LSU is, unfortunately for them, very familiar with this position of losing the season opener now here for the fifth straight season, the third under Kelly, kind of having a tune-up game in week two and then going into SEC play in week three. The last 2 years, that started with Mississippi State. Now here, it's on the road at South Carolina. You've got an LSU team that's trying to work through a few different things, get the run game going on the offensive side, continue to improve on the defensive side in a couple of different ways and make up for the loss of Jacoby and Guillory up front. And so, you know, now it's about trying to get those things cleaned up and to try to make the 12-team college football playoff in year three. That is still going to be this team's goal, but their margin for error, once again, is really, really, really slim.
Yeah, Wilson, that's what I was going to really ask you about from an offensive standpoint, trying to get that run game going. You know about the weapons on the outside, but in the backfield and really with up front, you probably hadn't established the run as you would want to at this point, and losing one of your lead backs definitely hurts you in that standpoint. But just tell us so far, in your opinion, what they have to do to be able to have a little bit more balance or at least run the football against Carolina.
They have to be able to get some kind of just push up front. I mean, LSU's got these different run schemes kind of in place this year compared to last year when they were very heavy inside zone read with Jaden Daniels. Now it's much more trying to lean on the offensive line. And, you know, you're seeing counters, you're seeing, you know, pulling guards on those sorts of plays. You're seeing, you know, tosses out from the shotgun. That's different from what LSU did last year. And it just, for whatever reason, hasn't really taken hold. And that's surprising because you've got an offensive line with four returning starters. I mean, all four guys who have played together for 3 years. And while they were doing some different things the last 2 years in the run game, this hasn't worked yet. Brad Davis told the players on Tuesday he was probably going to be spending the night at the facility trying to kind of work through these things. Brian Kelly said this week that kind of tried to tamp down concerns, talking about, you know, they've gotten a lot of loaded boxes, so they've checked to some pass plays and some quick game stuff, and the passing game is almost actually an extension of the run game, and that he thinks the balance is just, you know, doing both things effectively, not necessarily being 50-50, you know, moving forward. But you hear from the players this week, especially Emory Jones, starting right tackle, and they know this is unacceptable. You know, Will Campbell coming out of this preseason was saying, like, we're going to run the football. We don't mind saying it to everybody, like, we're going to run the football, and they haven't been able to do that. Other than a little stretch there in the third quarter with John Emery against USC, they've been really ineffective in the run game. I mean, only 21 carries for 64 yards against Nichols, and that's not going to get it done as you go into SEC play.
Especially a South Carolina defense, you know, they're pretty strong in their SEC opener. They go on the road, win at Kentucky 31-6, Kentucky just 44 total yards passing. So it does feel like a strength versus strength. LSU's offensive line, I mean, they haven't given up a sack in two games against the South Carolina defensive front. Something's got to give for one side.
Absolutely. That's definitely where this game seems to come down to, is which of those strengths is going to be able to kind of top the other one. South Carolina's defense ranks top 10 nationally in sacks, tackles for loss, forced fumbles, and interceptions. They've created quite a bit of havoc They got 10 sacks, 19 tackles for loss, really led by their two edge rushers, Dylan Stewart and Kyle Kennard. Stewart's a freshman who's been really impressive through 2 weeks. Kennard's a senior. They've also got two big defensive tackles, Tonka Hemingway being one of them. The name of the other is suddenly slipping my memory. But guys who are, you know, 6'4", 300-plus pounds right there in the middle. And that's really been the strength of this South Carolina defense. But they've got some solid players in the secondary as well, Kilgore being the name to know back there. And that's really why they got out to such a big lead against Kentucky. But offensively, they don't really scare you in a lot of ways. So if LSU's offensive line, it's really a big game for them. If they can establish the run, then LSU should probably be I think in a comfortable position in this game, because it might be hard for South Carolina's offense to keep up, even though that's kind of on the other side of the ball, weakness versus weakness. But, you know, that defensive front for South Carolina and how LSU is able to handle them is really where this comes down to. Although LSU's offensive line has struggled in the running game, they have yet to allow a sack this season, so that's a good sign.
Wilson, are you in Columbia?
Yes, I'll be there. Currently in Charlotte, but yeah, we'll be in Columbia.
No. So that's what I was gonna ask you. You know, just what the feel was in the city, and you know, just what the enthusiasm that you could feel around it. But I mean, even in Charlotte, that's a city that pretty much pulls for USC for South Carolina.
Yeah, I haven't been able to get a sense of that from where we are, unfortunately, yet. The most I can say about that is just sort of talking to people who cover South Carolina. There's clearly a buzz that hasn't been there consistently for a while. And I mean, you know, College Game Day is going down there this weekend. The weather seems like it's going to end up cooperating tomorrow. There was some thunderstorms in the forecast. We'll see kind of how that factors into things. But, you know, South Carolina, after struggling week one against Old Dominion, you know, it was all of a sudden kind of a trendy little team. And I don't know why I said little, but, like, you know, they're kind of a trendy team there. I mean, in terms of, like, can they start to create any sort of noise? And a win against LSU would do that. So, especially with College Game Day coming to town, it sounds like there's a lot of excitement down there.
Talking about the quarterbacks a little bit, certainly while LSU tries to find, the replacement for John Emery, you know, Nussmeier with six touchdown passes last week against Lenoris Sellers, who can really, you know, had two touchdown passes, but also can move the ball with his feet, and kind of look at that matchup a little bit.
You're saying, I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, just talk about the two quarterbacks, Nussmeier against Lenoris Sellers. Sellers, you know, has moved the ball throwing, but also is a threat to run as well.
Yeah, he is. You know, Lenoris Sellers is someone that Brian Kelly compared to sort of an Anthony Richardson type in terms of really big and physical. He ran, I think, 22 times for about 68 yards in South Carolina's opening game. Didn't run as much against Kentucky, but they also have Robbie Ashford, his backup, who LSU fans might remember from Auburn. Guys can be pretty fast. He came in there and ran the ball six times against Kentucky. And that's what really South Carolina really wants to do, is run the football. I mean, they're tied with Tennessee for the most rush attempts in the SEC through two games with 90. That is their identity. They haven't been very successful with it. They're averaging less than 3 yards per carry, but that's still what they want to do. And Sellers is a part of that in the run game with the quarterback. But he's also got a big arm. But they just don't have necessarily the weapons on the outside that, like, LSU has. Whereas with Nussmeier, that's what this offense has been to this point. You know, it's been, we're literally leaning on him and these wide receivers, guys like Kyron Lacy and Aaron Anderson, who's really stepped up, and some others, and Mason Taylor from the tight end position. And that's going to maybe continue to be what LSU has to go to as its strength is, you know, Nussmeier in the passing game. The one element that they need to kind of continue to work on in that passing game is the deep shots, which we know Garrett has the arm strength for. They just haven't really connected on anything deep downfield yet that's really impactful this season, other than, I suppose, a 41-yarder to Aaron Anderson there against USC.
Wilson Alexander, coverage LSU for the Advocate Times Picayune. Really, really appreciate your time on this Friday afternoon. Be safe driving down to Columbia tomorrow with all the game day traffic, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, y'all, for having me. Have a great weekend.
Same to
have
you.
Have fun. So, thank you.
The Tigers in College Game Day. Also want to say quickly, Magazine Pizza. Don't forget, 1068 Magazine. Dine in or delivery the best gourmet pizza selection in town. Magazine Pizza also has pastas, sandwiches, wings, and salads. MagazinePizza.com. They want to thank them for feeding our Saints broadcast team over the weekend, and coming weekend. So we'll talk a little Tulane football when we come back. Tulane on the road against the 15th-ranked Oklahoma Sooners. That and more as Fans of the Pros rolls on. Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister on WWLAMFM.com, always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back, Fans of the Pro. Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister. Talked a little LSU. Now we'll talk a little Tulane with Tulane sideline reporter as well as host of the Before the Whistle podcast, Maddie Hudak. Maddie, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing well down in Oklahoma now.
Yeah, so I spent some time a little south of there in Lawton, Oklahoma. So I've been at the Norman game day experience, and it is impressive. 2:30 tomorrow in Norman. Really, I'm just kind of curious, like how you kind of think Tulane bounces back when they had Kansas State at home last weekend. Kansas State ranked 16th at the time, and Tulane led 17-10, 20-10, 27-20, but end up falling and you know, losing 34-27. And then you got to go on the road against Oklahoma, who actually struggled against Houston last week, still got the W. But how do you think Tulane bounces back this weekend?
I think that they have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder now. And, you know, not that that game necessarily got stolen from them, because ultimately, as you just kind of said, they let the lead get away from them down to the end. But they really battled until the final snap during that game. And, you know, adversity kind of just seemed to keep hitting them at the end of the game. You'd think after that scoop and score, fumble recovery for the touchdown, that the offense might get a little more conservative or crumble a little bit. And I thought that the defense, to hold them three and out, give the offense a chance to go back and drive the ball down. I think that we saw really complete game from Tulane last weekend, and I think they can really see the pathway for themselves now. And with Oklahoma having a lot of injuries, especially on the offensive side of the ball, I think it's an opportunity for Tulane to really bounce back and take advantage of a depleted team.
Maddie, and I'll say it for you, they were robbed in that game. I mean, you can talk about, yes, defensively, you shouldn't have given up, you know, the touchdown or whatever, having a lead, but that was not a pass interference. The offensive guy has to be able to release off the line of scrimmage. I understand what the official is looking at and what he's trying to call. He thought it was a pick, you know, and he thought it was a pick play, and that was not pass interference on the offense.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you. And just the way that game kind of got called in general, it felt like the refs were just inserting themselves a lot in the second half of the game. And whenever that starts to really happen, not a good feeling. And I thought that, you know, again, in spite of what kind of felt like was working against them at a home game, I thought Tulane really shut out that noise really well and didn't let any of that frustration spill over onto the field. We were frustrated on the sideline for sure.
Well, when you talk about, you know, just playing with a chip on your shoulder, having another ranked opponent, going on the road, knowing, you know, you'll have your section, really, that's it, in that stadium that it's pulling for you. Just tell me what you've seen from this team so far this week, and, you know, just the approach that they're going to take. Is it us against them?
I think it really is. Obviously, the hurricane kind of truncated what I think they would have liked a little more practice this week. But I also think the team being together in a hotel for two or three nights really kind of helps that bonding mentality going into this weekend. But from what I've heard, Tulane has a pretty good travel contingency coming up here. But this team in the last couple of seasons really has thrived in an away environment, in that kind of hostile road environment. And when we were in the Saints practice facility, I noticed, you know, they start practicing and really playing that opponent crowd noise really, really loud to get Darian Mensah especially used to having to kind of call snaps for the first time in a stadium where he can't really hear his own voice. And so seeing that preparation this week was super important.
I was curious, give me a sense of what the impact was for Tulane. We were all kind of dealing with our own, you know, private situation with Francine. How did it impact them from what they wanted to do this past week?
I think they probably would have wanted to practice a little more outside, especially having to share the facility with the Saints. I think that it was a pretty short practice on it was Wednesday, I believe, before the Saints wanted to get in there and practice. I'm not sure if they were really able to do anything yesterday. And then having the travel day today, probably not as much practice as you would have liked, but especially after kind of getting a little beat up in that game, I think having full health going into this weekend is going to be just as important as those practice reps. And so you have a team with pretty fresh legs coming into this weekend. And again, you really can't say the same about Oklahoma on their side.
Maddie, last one for me. What do you think Tulane has to do to be successful on tomorrow?
So So they're going to have an easier coverage to throw against, but it's going to be, I think, a lot more difficult in terms of the skill at all three levels of Oklahoma's defense. Darian's not going to have the same three safety coverage that he's going to have to throw into. So with that in mind, you'd really like to see them execute a little bit better. We've seen just Tulane have a lot of penalties, and I know last week's they're up in the air as to how, you know, correct they may have been, but they had a lot in their season opener as well, and that can extend drives and have those little mistakes kind of build up on top of one another. So you'd like to see that. And Oklahoma, I think they're tied with two other schools leading the nation with 8 turnovers in 2 games and a +7 margin in turnovers. So having that going into this weekend, protecting the football to me is really, really going to be important. But Tulane established their run last weekend, and I thought you saw a really balanced offense from them. So I think really having the defense and the pass rush especially come together, this is a team where they're on their third center. There's so many guys on their offensive line that are banged up that this is definitely an opportunity for that pass rush to really get generating. And Jackson Arnold is a lot less mobile than what they had to face in Avery Johnson last weekend.
And as an alumnus, I mean, there was a time, and it would be years ago, that a Tulane team traveling to Oklahoma and Norman would be in awe of the situation. But it just feels like that's just so different now. This is not that Tulane. They've been there, played ranked opponents, beaten ranked opponents on the road. It just feels like they're no longer in awe of just being in the situation. That's not enough anymore.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, being in awe of the situation. I think that's kind of been the last couple of years for people, but it's really settled in that this team is a contender now. But having this many new faces, you really just didn't know for sure. But, you know, even though the 10th anniversary of Yeoman Stadium, they still had a loss there. To be able to build on that, they've always had that one Power 5 game that either went in their favor with Kansas State or got away from them, and everyone looked back on it last year with Ole Miss. I think having the opportunity to try to and get another one of these big wins, that's really not lost on these guys. But I think they can see the pathway now in a way that they might have not been able to see after the first game with just so many new guys, and knowing they can really trust their quarterback in Darian Mensah. This team's in a really, really good place heading into their first road opponent.
Well, we appreciate your time. Enjoy your time in Norman. You will enjoy the game tomorrow just from an atmosphere standpoint. It is unique. There's nothing going on in Oklahoma except for Norman on Saturday. So thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I missed out on it due to Ida the first time, so looking forward to seeing it this time.
You bet. Enjoy the game. Maddie Hudak, Tulane sideline reporter. Also, she is the host of Before the Whistle podcast. So Tulane and Oklahoma tomorrow at 2:30. Got to take a break. Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister, fans in the pro. We'll talk about Deuce's keys to a Saints victory when we come back for one final block here on Fans of the Pro. Keep it right here. And welcome back, and we shall do just that. We will talk to James, who's been on hold, talking about Saints and Cowboys. James, welcome to the show. You're on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talking text line with Deuce McAllister.
All right, thanks, guys. So, well, before I even looked at the overall schedule, the first thing that came to my mind was I know we were playing Dallas and the Bulls. Zimmer and Bowles are the two guys that are the two defensive coordinators that it's hard. They don't put a lot of stuff on tape. I mean, Bowles will come out of his head the day or two before the game and come up with certain blitz packages, and that's not good for a young or inexperienced line. And Zimmer, I remember when he came up the middle with his guys against Sean in the playoffs. So everybody knows that he's going to get chipped, speaking of Parsons, but I think he's going to come up the middle more than I think a lot of guys think. I'm looking at Parsons trying to come up the middle. I think even if Ferguson's not playing, that guy, the last year's rookie, he's more talented. I mean, he's a better – put it this way. I think they know that we have a weakness defending the tight end, at least we did last year. And I don't see Ferguson not playing, or if he plays,
I don't think he's going to play. He hasn't practiced yet.
Yeah, Ferguson, I don't think he plays. They're listing him, but I don't think he plays. He'll probably be ruled out tomorrow. And moving Parsons to the A-gap, that doesn't bother me. It's when he loops. That's what bothers you. Because if he's just going to rush from the A-gap, I'm fine with that. It's when he is a looper that he becomes a problem.
Because of his speed.
So with that, I was also impressed the first game, obviously a regular season, but the thing that impressed me more than anything was that we converted on third down running the ball. I love that, man. And I mean, they're coming this weekend. They're coming, and especially coming on third down. And I think Kubiak knows Zimmer better than I think. Sean knows Zimmer just because you know, Sean, Zimmer and Shanahan have had some kind of relationship, or, you know, they compete against one another. So Kubiak's been sitting there next to Shanahan. I expect him to run the ball, and I think we can win the game. Now, the thing that really shocked me about the Cowboys, I don't know if you guys saw the game, they kicked the 66 yarder. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's sitting on our bench that kicked the 65 yarder. That he called it off because he called a timeout, but that just goes to show what kind of strong leg that game he has. Yeah. But he's got a hell of a leg, is what I'm saying.
So then it was a 71 yarder, and he stayed on the field. But they ended up trying to throw a Hail Mary.
Right, but he's got a hell of a leg, and this will be the first game that they've played since they got embarrassed by the Packers. But up until that game, they had a two-year win streak at home, so that's going to be on their mind, I'm sure.
Yep. Thank you, James. We appreciate the phone call, and I agree. There, you can't argue with Dallas's home record not in the playoffs. They are dominating.
Yeah, so, regular season, they've played well. I mean, but that's been Dallas's MO right. The last couple of years. It's once they get to the playoffs, they don't show up. But, I mean, for the Saints, Sean and Zim were very close. So Sean knew Zim well. I mean, it may have been a different look. We didn't block very well as far as the double A gap. But, I mean, from a prepared standpoint, I don't think that they're going to throw a lot at you that you haven't seen. You know, whether it's, hey, you know, there are not many blitzes that teams are just creating out of the blue air. Now, you may not have prepared for them a lot, but it's not like that they haven't run this certain blitz. I mean, because there's only so many blitzes that teams are going to run. That's just, I don't know anybody that's creating a new look. You know, you're zone blitzing, you're weak, you're strong, it's double A, it's zero. You know, I don't know what else you're creating. But anyway, if you execute, you give yourself a chance. He talked about something. The Saints have to run the football. I don't think the Saints will be successful if they do not run the football. So whether that's first down, third down, whatever it may be, the Saints have to run the football.
To be able to maintain your offense. You can't
Not even maintain your offense. You can get behind. I'm not worried about them getting behind. They can fall down, you know, 10 points, 14 points. You still have to be able to run the football. I mean, I don't think that you're going to be very successful against this team having to drop back pass 40 times. You're just not going to be successful. Your offense is not built that way. You have to be able to run the football, even if it's some tough sledding, so to speak, as far as yards-wise. I'm fine having to punt. I'm fine having to put defense out there and let them play the game. What you can't do is give up on the run because you're not having a lot of success early, and now you allow this team just to say, oh, we can just rush the quarterback. We don't have to worry about them running the ball.
Shorten the game, so to speak, because you just got to grind it out. I mean, flip it for me.
Yeah, it's not even shortening in the game. In a sense, yes, you're shortening the game, but really, that's just your offense. You're going to run the ball. That's week in and week out, and that's why taking your team on the road, you want to run the football. I mean, it's not necessarily because you fear them offensively. That's just who you are. That's your identity as a team.
So then defensively against Dallas's offense, CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks at wide receiver, Ezekiel Elliott at running back.
Go be a bully. That's what I want you to do. Go be a bully. That's what the Saints have to do on defense. You got to go and be a bully because they want to play fast. They want to get it to the toys. You got to hit the quarterback. You have to affect the quarterback. And if I have to send pressure, then that means I'm going to leave somebody on the island. I don't want to get beat over the top, but I want to contest at the catch point. But you can't allow that team just to play fast. You can't allow Dak to feel comfortable in the pocket. You've got to make him move a little bit. Dak has the ability to run. I don't know if Dak really wants to run. He will, but, you know, you can't allow Dak to just break containment, but you've got to hit him as well.
And move the pocket. They'll move the pocket with him just to create some throwing lanes for him.
Well,
at least against Cleveland.
Well, that was because of that D-line. And right. I think that they respect the Saints in the same manner, you know. And so it'll be interesting. Win the line of scrimmage, run the football, and then be a bully on defense.
Love it. Be a bully. That'll be the T-shirts we're wearing on Sunday morning. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Fans and the Pros. My thanks to Charlie Long in the booth and to all of our guests this afternoon and to my good friend Deuce McAllister for being a part of this show. It's a big one on Sunday. Thanks for listening to Fans and the Pro. The Brian Kelly Show is up next, and it's high school football. Keep it right here. And welcome back, and we shall do just that. We will talk to James, who's been on hold, talking about Saints and Cowboys. James, welcome to the show. You're on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talking text line with Deuce McAllister.
All right, thanks, guys. So, well, before I even looked at the overall schedule, the first thing that came to my mind was I know we were playing Dallas and then Bowles. Zimmer and Bowles are the two guys that are the two defensive coordinators that it's hard. They don't put a lot of stuff on tape. I mean, Bowles will come out of his head the day or two before the game and come up with certain blitz packages, and that's not good for a young or inexperienced line. And Zimmer, I remember when he came up the middle with his guys against Sean in the playoffs. So everybody knows that he's going to get chipped, speaking of Parsons. But I think he's going to come up the middle more than I think a lot of guys think. I'm looking at Parsons trying to come up the middle. I think even if Ferguson's not playing, that guy, the last year's rookie, he's more talented. I mean, he's a better – put it this way, I think they know that we have a weakness defending the tight end, at least we did last year. And I don't see Ferguson not playing, or if he plays,
I don't think he's going to play. He hasn't practiced yet.
Yeah, Ferguson, I don't think he plays. They're listing him, but I don't think he plays. He'll probably be ruled out tomorrow. And moving Parsons to the A-gap, that doesn't bother me. It's when he loops. That's what bothers you. Because if he's just going to rush from the A-gap, I'm fine with that. It's when he is a looper that he becomes a problem
because of his speed.
So with that, I was also impressed the first game, obviously a regular season. But the thing that impressed me more than anything was that we converted on third down, running the ball. I love that, man. And they're coming this weekend. They're coming, and especially coming on third down. And I think Kubiak knows Zimmer better than I think Sean knows Zimmer, just because, you know, Zimmer and Shanahan have had some kind of relationship, or they compete against one another. So Kubiak's been sitting there next to Shanahan. I expect him to run the ball, and I think we can win the game. Now, the thing that really shocked me about the Cowboys, I don't know if you guys saw the game. They kick the 66 yarder. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's sitting on our bench that kicked the 65 yarder. That he called it off because he called a timeout. But that just goes to show what kind of strong leg that game he has. Yeah. But he's got a hell of a leg, is what I'm saying.
So then it was a 71 yarder, and he stayed on the field. But they ended up trying to throw a Hail Mary.
Right, but he's got a hell of a leg, and this will be the first game that they've played since they got embarrassed by the Packers. But up until that game, they had a two-year win streak at home, so that's going to be on their mind, I'm sure.
Yep. Thank you, James. We appreciate the phone call, and I agree. You can't argue with Dallas's home record not in the playoffs. They are dominating.
Yeah, so, regular season, they've played well. I mean, but that's been Dallas's MO right. The last couple of years. It's once they get to the playoffs, they don't show up. But, I mean, for the Saints, Sean and Zim were very close. So Sean knew Zim well. I mean, it may have been a different look. We didn't block very well as far as the double A gap. But, I mean, from a prepared standpoint, I don't think that they're going to throw a lot at you that you haven't seen. You know, whether it's, hey, you know, there are not many blitzes that teams are just creating out of the blue air. Now, you may not have prepared for them a lot, but it's not like that they haven't run this certain blitz. I mean, because there's only so many blitzes that teams are going to run. I don't know anybody that's creating a new look. You know, you're zone blitzing, you're weak, you're strong, it's double A, it's zero. You know, I don't know what else you're creating. But anyway, if you execute, you give yourself a chance. He talked about something. The Saints have to run the football. I don't think the Saints will be successful if they do not run the football. So whether that's first down, third down, whatever it may be, the Saints have to run the football.
To be able to maintain your offense. You can't
maintain your offense. You can get behind. I'm not worried about them getting behind. They can fall down, you know, 10 points, 14 points. You still have to be able to run the football. I mean, I don't think that you're going to be very successful against this team having to drop back pass 40 times. You're just not going to be successful. Your offense is not built that way. You have to be able to run the football, even if it's some tough sledding, so to speak, as far as yards-wise. I'm fine having to punt. I'm fine having to put defense out there and let them play the game. What you can't do is give up on the run because you're not having a lot of success early, and now you allow this team just to say, oh, we can just rush the quarterback. We don't have to worry about them running the ball.
Shorten the game, so to speak, because you just got to grind it out. I mean, flip it for me.
Yeah, it's not even shortening in the game. In a sense, yes, you're shortening the game, but really, that's just your offense. You're going to run the ball. That's week in and week out, and that's why taking your team on the road, you want to run the football. I mean, it's not necessarily because you fear them offensively. That's just who you are. That's your identity as a team.
So then defensively against Dallas's offense, CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks at wide receiver, Ezekiel Elliott at running back.
Go be a bully. That's what I want you to do. Go be a bully. That's what the Saints have to do on defense. You got to go and be a bully because they want to play fast. They want to get it to the toys. You got to hit the quarterback. You have to affect the quarterback. And if I have to send pressure, then that means I'm going to leave somebody on the island. I don't want to get beat over the top, but I want to contest at the catch point. But you can't allow that team just to play fast. You can't allow Dak to feel comfortable in the pocket. You've got to make him move a little bit. Dak has the ability to run. I don't know if Dak really wants to run. He will, but, you know, you can't allow Dak to just break containment, but you've got to hit him as well.
And move the pocket. They'll move the pocket with him just to create some throwing lanes for him.
Well,
at least against Cleveland.
Well, that was because of that D-line. And right. I think that they respect the Saints in the same manner, you know. And so it'll be interesting. Win the line of scrimmage, run the football, and then be a bully on defense.
Love it. Be a bully. That'll be the T-shirts we're wearing on Sunday morning. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Fans and the Pros. My thanks to Charlie Long in the booth and to all of our guests this afternoon and to my good friend Deuce McAllister for being a part of this show. It's a big one on Sunday. Thanks for listening to Fans and the Pro. The Brian Kelly Show is up next, and it's high school football. Keep it right here.